Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America, on Tuesday, November 18th, 2014. Voted Best Local Radio Show in the Daily Breeze Reader Choice Poll 2014, and we're very proud of that. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For more information, visit their website at www.academyofforeignlanguages.com, that's all spelled out, academyofforeignlanguages.com, or call 310-975-4133. That's 310-975-4133. You can find out more about us at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with Solid Roots in the Community and a partnership with the Official Disaster Preparation Establishment. Our producer is founder and president of the local Manhattan Beach CERT Association and the Red Cross's community ambassador to Manhattan Beach, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today?
Well, good morning, Joe. I am fine, thank you. Thank you very much. Good morning, listeners.
And, of course, with us today is owner-producer-writer of South Bay by Jackie.com, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Joe. Good morning, George.
Good morning. Good morning, young lady.
Well, this is exciting. We had a wonderful discussion last week, and we're going to continue that discussion. Jackie, who's our guest today?
Don't you love these part twos?
Yes, I do.
We're going to continue, as you said, our conversation with last week with guest Richard Earl Broom. Richard is the author of Leaving the Trees, a fictional account of how the cyber threat could destroy the global financial markets and the likely aftermath, and the sequel, Good Crazy, which was released just last week. He frequently writes articles on resilience and survival, the two most recent being Building a Culture of Preparedness and Mind the Gap. Richard resides in Bozeman, Montana, and teaches part-time at Montana State University. He joined the U.S. Army at age 18 with a high school diploma and then spent the next 27 years in military service, going from a private to a full colonel and earning his bachelor's degree and two master's degrees. He spent the next 19 years as a businessman, mostly on Wall Street, and had the extraordinary good fortune to be asked to serve on the White House staff for two presidents of the United States, Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, as a member of their National Security Council staff on their crisis management team. During this period, he also spent a great deal of time studying and learning about the many threats to the United States and what measures need to be taken for our survival as a nation if the worst ever occurred. Richard consults to both government and commercial businesses, helping them to plan for the resilience of their enterprises given the increasing threats facing all of us. Now, as I mentioned, we'll be continuing the conversation we began last week. Welcome back to the program, Richard. We are so glad you could join us again.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're thrilled to have you, Richard, because we never get to the end of the discussion when we're talking with you. Last week, we talked about just an encyclopedic number of things, and to pick up the discussion where we were talking about solutions, as we often try to do when we you know, talk about all of the issues that there are out there, but what are some of the solutions that you see on the horizon that policymakers will take advantage of? I remember that I did use the or conjure the image of a recent commentator that our political sphere and our political dialogue today is like a circular fire squad. It's maddening, not from an ideological point of view on the left or the right, but everyone's against everyone, and it's nothing can get done like that, Richard.
I agree. I think it's important to often step back and get the big picture in focus. It's hard for all of us to do with all that goes on in our busy lives, but attempt to get that in focus and get to the core issues. What do people want? What do people need? You know, I was reflecting somewhat today about 9/11 occurring, you know, 13 years ago. And how did we all feel on September the 12th, 2001? And I think we all felt a sense of outrage, grief, anger, but also resolve. And I think we need to find a way to get our nation back and our leaders back to the point where we have that resolve again to move things forward, make things better, protect America better, be better prepared for the things, the threats that face us, which have multiplied, actually, in the last 13 years. And that's kind of the center of my thoughts this morning.
Mm. So
last Wednesday, you know, Congress went back in session. All the newbies are meeting all of their people, and the new speaker, our new speaker of the, made some interesting comments, and I it's been a while, but to the effect that he's looking to work together with the other side. And, you know, I mean, you know, it sounded good. You know, hopefully it's just not something coming out of his mouth. Okay, no. That's right. We're supposed to be political.
Well, I'm trying to get out of the senator, as you know. Those kind of conversations and thoughts appropriate and hopeful.
Right.
I wish they would come true.
Yes.
But I think we find ourselves, again, divisive, unfortunately. And the danger I see is too often this divisiveness does not allow us to get things done that we must get done. I will point up an example of what I think about that. You know, we've all been talking, and I think we talked earlier, I've been on two shows now, but at least earlier, about the Ebola situation.
Mm-hmm.
And while we think about that, and I know the Gates Foundation is going to instantly produce some money to provide for Ebola prevention and relief, somehow trying to contain the crisis in West Africa, which I think is terrific, because the money goes there right away and it starts to be put into effect right away. The Congress, I think sometime this week, actually is going to meet and talk about Ebola and what they must do to appropriate money. It takes so long for that money to go through the system, yet Ebola cases are still increasing in West Africa. This crisis is far from contained. And I would just wish our leadership, as you reflected earlier, was better at acting, at taking more action more quickly. And with some of these crises, I have a great deal of experience, as you know, in crisis management. You have to act now. You cannot plan something you're going to do in 90 days. And I become concerned that we're taking too long to resolve some of these crises.
Mm-hmm. You know, Richard, according to the Time Magazine article a couple of weeks ago on the Ebola crisis, 90 days is going to be way too late. 90 days, they're saying that by February, if this thing isn't, if we're not on top of it in Africa, they're talking about 1.4 million people having Ebola.
And just imagine that in the essence of how this disease can spread. How much damage that can do, how much impact that can have if this is not contained in 90 days. The Congress, I think, is talking somewhere in the line of $6 billion in a variety of ways are going to appropriate monies for this, again, taking a great deal of time. I mean, the $50 million the Gates Foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates, is offering is significant, certainly significant. But compared to $6 billion that the Congress is estimating, It's just a stopgap. So I become quite concerned we're too little too late, even with the best of intentions.
We're in a place now where technology can tell us instantly with cell phones and mobile devices what's going on the ground, but we can't act fast enough. What kind of dynamic will that bring? Because if truly we had a million cases of Ebola, we would see on the nightly news every night case after case, you know, scenario after scenario. Things would get very dicey, and I'm not saying that it would come here to America, but we would feel it like we felt the Vietnam War on television every night.
Well, we would certainly feel it, Joe, and also would feel it in the sense that there's going to be an economic impact that will roll through globally as nations become concerned, shut their borders, reduce their commerce, reduce transportation flights, and so forth. This is certainly a significant threat to the United States in the personal impact people would feel being threatened by the disease itself. But there's also an economic impact that would cascade through the system, which so far has not appeared to have happened yet. As I've said, I think Mali is a country where the cases are starting to increase. We need to get on the ground and start to prevent these. And as you know, the Obama administration has sent healthcare workers and military into these regions to try to prevent this. We're not well informed at this point what is going on, but that lurks in the background and does concern me greatly.
I'm going to jump in here again. Two things. Again, according to that Time article, they're saying that they need, I think it was 19,000 medical people over there now to get this under control. But the other thing, besides that, I wanted, you guys were talking about Facebook raised $50 million and the government is trying to get approval for $6 billion aid package or something. Okay, we know the government moves slow, but
Bill and Melinda Gates.
Bill and Melinda Gates, yeah. So they got $50 million. They're putting out there now. Where do they put that? Who are they working with? How does it get out there? Do they have to go through government channels to get it on the ground and working, or do they pull up their own operation and say, we're doing this ourselves? How does that work?
I think, Jackie, you're spot on. I mean, you're really describing the difficulty of dealing with several African nations, dealing with their different bureaucracies, their different ways of doing business, and, you know, they're in different levels of efficiency and integrity and so forth. We don't know. I mean, I can't describe, you know, one country from another, but that adds multi-level complexity to this problem and slows the response. Well, the $50 million in the pipeline is great news. I think you've absolutely correctly defined the issue at hand. You know, what we call the military boots on the ground. Well, doctors on the ground and nurses on the ground and medical professionals on the ground. How soon does that happen? How soon do we start stemming the problem? What I see in the press are people valiantly trying to solve this problem. Jackie used the figure of 19,000. I don't dispute that figure, but where do these 19,000 come from? I think they're not readily at hand. I think they're going to have to come from global, and we put them in a position of being in personal danger. This is not a simple problem to solve. It's a very complex, frightening problem to solve.
The only reason I asked that question about how do you take this $50 million and make it work is because, as Joe and George, both and I, we were all down in Louisiana for after Katrina. And I signed up with Habitat for Humanity, all right? And they put a call out. They said, anybody that can come, come, right? We'll provide you with everything. And what happened was faith-based organizations and other organizations were there. And what happened was the government said, we need to work with these people. And they set up a camp, all right? I think it was called Camp Premier. And it was a 2,000-bed camp. And they invited every faith-based organization and college students, anybody that was willing to come down. You didn't even have to be in a group. You could come in individually. And they housed us. And it happened fast, and it was great. And I'm wondering if they have something like that over in Africa now for
well,
all of these groups that want to help?
That's the question. From the U.S. end, we have a Bolivar now called Ron Klain, named Ron Klain. Who orchestrates this? Have you seen Ron Klain in the press? Has he?
No.
Any pronouncement? Is anything happening? I mean, how does this – absolutely right, Jackie. How does this come to be? I'm quite concerned that there's no organization. There's no leadership. That's, as you know, one of my real things. Leadership, to, when in charge, take charge. And when you take charge, take responsibility. I don't see that happening. Hmm. I don't think there's any evidence of that.
I have not heard about this Ebola czar. I have not heard about him yet.
Ron Klain was appointed by President Obama to be the Ebola czar for the country, for the United States. He's a political operative, a lobbyist in Washington, D.C. He was an aide to Vice President, I think, Biden. If I'm incorrect, correct me, but
I think so.
Correct. Yeah. And he is the czar. He is the person that's supposed to be the point person, the tip of the spear as we go forward. And yet he is the most invisible tip of the spear I've ever seen. Who is in charge?
Right.
I don't know. I never heard of him. I don't know.
My point exactly. There should be somebody, and you raise the issue, how does all this come together in a constructive way that solves the problem?
Right. Well, that's an open question for us, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
To be determined.
Determined. That was an interesting.
Yes.
Determined.
we're discussing this, in a way, in a comfortable way, but this is pretty serious stuff.
Right.
I think, as you guys really agree.
Right.
And, I'm quite concerned that I don't see this leadership taking place.
As I said, read the Time magazine articles, and it's scary. The numbers are really, really scary. They're talking about February. That's 3 months away.
Okay.
3 months away.
And
if it's not contained by then.
And in February, Jackie, if the cases are increasing in West Africa, even though we're trying to stop them at the airports and so forth, how many are going to slip through, and can this take off again?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Wow. Now, from the context of what you're trying to do, Richard, in terms of help people get their minds around these kinds of threats, besides more money, what can people do to help write their congressman? What can people do to help in this case of Ebola?
Well, I did a piece, an article, I think I've talked about it in a previous show, but I'll talk about it again, where I want to raise a level of a culture of preparedness. And in my most recent article, Mind the Gap, I talked about challenging our political leaders. You know, they respond to what they think the voters are worried about, and we get them votes or not get votes. It's a dynamic. I teach leadership, as you know, at Montana State University.
Hmm.
It's a dynamic of power and losing power. And so political leaders want to stay in power. So they have to bring to them and get their ear around things that the populace is most worried about. And I feel like the country has become too distracted by what did Kim Kardashian wear today and that type of thing, as opposed
exactly.
to what is really the most important things. And, you know, we don't want to all live day to day in a gloom and doom scenario, worrying about everything, but we want to have an appropriate level of awareness and active participation. How do we protect ourselves? That's what we're trying to reach, what I call a culture of preparedness. I used an earlier example, I think, about how we've all become more health and fitness conscious. I think we've got to adapt now with the multi-level threats facing this country of how we do that in an environment where we have threats now that you cannot see, that can reach out and touch you, and you're not even aware they're touching you until suddenly things go very badly.
Hmm.
The unknown unknowns.
That's right.
It's important to note, if we're talking about these donations, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation pledged $50 million, which in their process, Jackie, actually goes directly to the aid agencies on the ground. They're very, very specific about cutting out red tape.
Right.
So literally they're carrying wire transfers and or whatever they have to directly to the agencies on the ground so that they can be funded, so that they can hire local people, local gas, buy trucks, whatever they need to do to get rolling fast.
So they have their own Ebola czar. at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, somebody that's running the show.
Well, I mean to say that they're going to make sure that the money gets doled out quickly. And also Mark Zuckerberg has pledged $25 million of his own personal money to join that of Bill and Melinda Gates, $50 million.
And, well, Zuckerberg, Facebook is raising money.
And Facebook?
Facebook is raising money, and that could be huge.
Yeah.
That could match, you know, the $6
billion. Right, right.
You know, because how many Facebook users are there, right?
1.2 billion.
All right, so if everybody donates $10, there you go, or $6, right?
It could be huge.
So what does it say about us that Zuckerberg and Gates and Facebook can instantly respond and try to do the right thing and direct the money, yet we continue to dither as a country?
Yes.
Very interesting. I mean,
Sorry. You hit that one right on the
head. Don't get yours started.
Okay, that's right. We're trying to be politically correct.
Well, you know, one of the things I write about is our dysfunctionality as a nation. Good intentions, but the inability to execute. And I think you're seeing an example of this right now.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, 9/11, how did we all feel the day after and the day after that? And how long did that last? About 2-3 weeks?
I would say so. I think it's been steadily declining.
Yeah. But it lasted about 2-3 weeks where it was the only thing on everybody's mind, and then it fell off the news wire and other things took its place, and, you know, everybody went their own way, and we're hostages to a news cycle. Mm-hmm. Right?
It's what I would call recognizing there's a new operating reality for all of us.
Yeah.
And not being distracted by the other things in our lives. And we're all human. We have, you know, jobs and relationships and commutes and bills and whatever is facing us. But there is this issue we have to find a way to connect with. We've done it with things like healthcare and diversity and good things we've corrected and fixed. We've got to do this for preparedness as well.
Right. Well, we are having a wonderful discussion. This is part two of our previous discussion last week. We're talking with Richard Broom, author of Good Crazy and a professor of leadership at Montana State University. So we want to talk about that a little bit. Also, we need to thank a sponsor. Jackie, who do we want to thank today?
Joe, it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, Certified Public Accountants and Consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrance South Bay YMCA, Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. For more information, visit the website at www.bcws.com or call 310-542-0011.
All right, we're back, and Richard, we are in a position now, not only in this country, but in other countries around the world. I want to get your take on the energy situation. There are controversial new technologies called fracking or hydraulic fractioning of shale deposits that allow us to extract more oil from existing oil fields. But the effect is being felt throughout our economy. With I just paid less than $3 a gallon for gas. We are now producing more oil than Saudi Arabia. Do you think we've turned the corner on the energy crisis?
I think we need to embrace the good news that you just described, but recognize we need to do more. You know, I was on the National Security Council staff for two presidents, one of whom engaged in the first Persian Gulf War, and all you read and so forth in the press, the bottom line obviously was our dependence on oil in the Middle East. Hmm. We now have a source of oil that's coming through the country, through the Bakken region in Montana, North Dakota, that we would hope to get on the pipeline at some point down to Port Arthur and Baton Rouge, Louisiana, other places in the part of the United States that allows us to ship this to other countries, but become more energy independent. That has been such a central requirement for our national security and the vulnerability we've experienced. So when you describe $2.99 gas, which we're getting in Bozeman, Montana, too, it's great for the pocketbook, it's great for the economy, but we've got to make sure it's sustainable and we have a sustainable society in the United States based on less energy dependence.
It is a great thing. I mean, I think one of the things that we have to look at, of course, is this isn't the end. What is Boone Pickens saying? He's saying that America is the Saudi Arabia of wind energy. If we can get those wind turbines built in those areas where many communities are welcoming them because of the good paying long-term jobs of constructing them, and then when they're online, they're going to produce a tremendous amount of energy. And then there's the political turmoil in Canada regarding tar sands and traditional tribal grounds. But those reserves are yet again another Saudi Arabia or two, they say. So we really have turned the corner on supply of oil. But then, of course, there's the renewable energy front where we really want to get off oil anyway.
I think Boone Pickens would love us to both buy natural gas and use of wind industry, which I'm certainly for, but I think we have to recognize in the present we are still very much dependent on oil out of the ground that is refined and turned to gas and other petroleum products that the nation uses. You know, we've been talking about energy independence and all of this since at least the gas signs of the 1970s. How many years has it been? 40, 50 years? And we're still having this conversation, Joe.
Right.
I tend to be more a pragmatic person. Let's make good use of the oil in the ground we have now, efficiently, effectively, environmentally sound, get that pipeline in place, but use that time to get in other places, other things like natural gas and wind to help us along. I'm not an expert on wind energy, but I know that it's not yet quite having the impact that we would like it to have, but certainly we'd want to find ways to make this happen over time.
Right.
Richard, I so agree with you. A, let's get off dependence on Middle East oil, right? We have our own. We can produce it, all right? Let's do that now, right? While you're doing that, work on the technology for electric, natural gas, wind, and all those other things, which we are. It's happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as George and Joe know, I was recently down in New Orleans. And while I was down there, on a little vacation with my family. And while I was down there, I got together with a couple of guys that were guests on our show a few months ago out of Plaquemines Parish. And Guy Legaste, right, Joe?
Mm-hmm.
Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for Plaquemines Parish. And while I was down there, they took us on an airboat tour of their bayou in Plaquemines Parish. And I got the whole story of what's gone down there. Basically, the oil rigs and the oil drilling that was happening offshore for several decades has decimated the bayou and the swamp and the wetlands, which was the first defense for the coastline against, you know, high swells, waves, tsunamis, hurricanes, whatever. And it decimated it. And they'll be the first guys to tell you that all of that oil drilling offshore, everything is sinking. All right? It's not good. So let's work with what we've got for now, but it's just as important, more important, for us to work on the other technologies.
Right. I agree. And I think the essence of this, what you're saying, Jackie, is do this, but let's be real. Let's really do the things we need to do while we have the time to do them. And that's what I see lacking right now coming out of the current government. I don't know what we've seen out of the Department of Energy lately, but nothing comes to mind like this.
Well, I'm going to defer to George for a minute. We've talked about several of the big crises, big issues, but we haven't talked about the things that we normally talk about, earthquakes, floods, and other kinds of natural disasters like that. Are there any natural disasters that you'd like to talk about, George, that you think Richard can shed some light on? George is with us, right?
Yeah, he's there.
Oh, maybe not.
He's looking at his notes.
Well, Richard, let me ask you, are there some natural disasters that you think we are not handling well as a nation, or is that something that's really under control?
I'm definitely not under control, Joe, but let me sort of talk about something that's...
Okay.
Go ahead, George, if you want to...
Sorry, here. Last week, the Europeans were able to put a piece of equipment on a comet that took them 10 years to get it there. And if they can do...
Oh, we're having some technical difficulties with George.
Well, you wanted me to go ahead and I was going to raise a point.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. You know, one of the things I think that's becoming interesting and prominent in our thoughts even today are how we feel about what's happening with climate change. I'm sitting in Bozeman, Montana tonight, and it's 3 degrees, but it's also very cold in other parts of the country. And I think we have to start to reckon that, I know this is controversial on both sides of this argument, but what is happening with our climate? Are we prepared for severe seasonal changes, violent weather, hurricanes, things like that? We've seen the effects of hurricanes and Hurricane Sandy in the last couple of years and so forth, severe cold. I mean, I think it snowed in South Carolina 2 weeks ago. What is going on here, and how well is our country really recognizing these changes? And I'll tell you the source of my concern about this. One of the things I learned at the White House with crisis management was sometimes a crisis starts to evolve, and you're not aware you're in it. You're not picking it up. You're sort of experiencing this cognitive dissonance that it's not. What you're seeing is not reality, yet it becomes reality. And I wonder if we're viewing climate change the same way.
Well, it is certainly true. You know, I've often had discussions with other scientific experts and friends that the Earth has had tremendous variations in climate that had nothing to do with us long before we arrived on the scene. And, of course, there are studies, a book in particular written by a professor at UCLA about mega droughts in California. Long before, you know, we were farming in California, there have been droughts of hundreds of years. So, you know, some of the things that we see that men are doing really are small in comparison to the natural variation of the climate.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jackie.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, can we really, I mean, I've read the same thing, and I know what you're talking about. Yet, with all the industrial changes that have occurred in the last 150 years, the pollutants going to the environments, the various things we're doing, to change things globally.
Right.
And how if you just look at the economies of countries that are suddenly becoming much more industrial, like China in parts of Asia, even Russia, which is a fairly agrarian society, mostly militaristic until the Soviet collapse in about 30 years ago. All these things going on, can we simply discount that there are not changes we are creating, and many scientists are not yet accurately measuring, and it could have effects down the road?
Right.
True.
George is back with us.
I am.
You're back. You know, I just want to say one thing on what you guys just touching on. My new BFF, James Madair, from
mm-hmm.
Plaquemines Parish,
mm-hmm.
he made a very good point when he was telling us about, you know, they're making great headway down there. They're rebuilding the wetlands and stuff. But he said, you know, anything that we or the atmosphere, the universe throws at Mother Earth, if you leave it alone, it'll repair itself. Mother Earth has a way of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I feel pretty positive about this.
Yeah, there's very, very hopeful signs about all kinds of ecosystems around the globe that have come back from the brink.
Chernobyl.
Absolutely. Chernobyl is an amazing adaptation. There's still radioactivity. And some of the plants and certainly some of the animals are paying a heavy price for that. But the, you know, life will move on and life will adapt.
Life finds a way.
Life finds a way.
From Jurassic Park, right?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I would say nevertheless something we keep on our radar screen as we go forward and keep an eye on.
Well, this is good. This is wonderful. We are nearing that end of the show, George, where we can talk about future shows. I know we're going to be dark during Thanksgiving, but will that affect this show on Tuesday?
Oh, not necessarily.
Okay.
I don't think so. As long as I can find somebody that's willing to come back and chat on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. I get
right.
Thanksgiving Day off. I get to go back to work on Friday.
Right.
But
he doesn't have a plan yet, but he's working on it.
All right.
Oh, I've got a plan. I've got a plan. Yeah, I've got two more Thanksgiving Fridays to work. That's it. That's my plan. But you know, coming up. Next Tuesday again. I'm looking for a guest. Work has been real busy, but we have just finished our CERT class, our fall CERT class in Manhattan Beach, with a total of 22 students, and one missed a few classes, which will get made up when that's done. That'll be 22 that we will.
Congratulations.
Graduated.
How many are in that class now? How many people overall in Manhattan Beach have you done?
We're over 400 now. We're
congratulations.
Over,
that's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, we've hit our 1% and going. This evening, our city council, our Manhattan Beach council, will recognize our EMR class, those members that put in over 80 hours of training to become the first ring in emergency medicine is EMR, and then you go to an EMT, and then to a paramedic, and then up into the nursing. So this evening they get to recognize all of our members. On December 6th is our gift wrapping for the community, starting at 10 in the morning until we are done wrapping. Bring your own scissors, and if you've got some extra tape, they probably are going to run out of it. And then on 12/14, you invite everybody up to Station 1 Manhattan Beach for the spaghetti dinner and then the fireworks to follow. So that's what we've got going on right now. I can fill everybody in on Santa and our time. We as a CERT organization are going to take the evening of 12:18 and hand candy out to the young people throughout our city. So that's what's going on at this moment. It was just a fabulous class. We kill somebody every class. I mean, I guess in the last 6.5 years, there was one class that we didn't kill somebody. But you know, listeners understand that they were able to get up and they learned from what they, you know, the mistakes they made. So I can just tell you to open your blinders up, look at the big picture before you go jump in something. And they've all learned, and they all came out of it better people and more prepared people.
Well, this is wonderful. We're Richard. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about your career as an educator at Montana State University.
Yes, it is.
Tell us a little bit about that. When did that begin?
Well, you know, I think I'd said in the earlier show I managed to flunk retirement. I had a career in the military, as you know, for 27 years, had a business career for about 19 years, mostly on Wall Street, doing consulting work, but I did work for one of the stock markets, NASDAQ. And then decided to retire to Montana. I have a long relationship with Montana, so this was not an arbitrary decision, but something was well planned. And after 6 months, discovered I was the world's worst golfer, clearly even after lessons, and needed to needed to do something to find a raison d'etre in life. And so I volunteered at the university to just come in and teach a class or two and talk. Ended up coaching some students who were professional coaching about how to leave the university, get a good job, have a good career, and so forth. And that was about a year and a half ago. And I now teach 3 classes and still coach 4 students, leadership and introduction and business and entrepreneurship for freshmen, and I also do some professional career perspectives teaching for students. So the raison d'etre problem has gone away. I now have I'm back at work. I'm not retired anymore. And what's good about university teaching is it's really innovating in the sense you're dealing with students. You're forced to show up every day to class with a hard ball and, you know, all your pitches going and really doing well and bringing good information to students that they embrace, and I thoroughly enjoy it.
Wonderful.
What you're saying is retirement is overrated.
It is overrated.
It's totally overrated.
I would caution all of you, as enticing as it seems that as you're facing the daily stresses of life, commutes and stresses and strains and so forth, that thought of just sort of hanging out of the house, you know, doing what you like to do, at a certain point, you're sort of bored watching Oprah, and you need to do something. So that's produced 2 novels out of me. I took a writing class, wrote a novel, Leaving the Trees, wrote another novel, just went out last week, Good Crazy, and started teaching. So I'm fully employed and stressed and happy about it right now.
All right.
We're glad you are. We're glad
Thank you
are.
So much.
It's, instead of Good Crazy, it's Good Stress.
It is. You know, I think I had somebody say this to me once, and you do need a little inner tension in life, a reason to get up in the morning, something to do. And I'm all for hanging around the house all day in my sweats and watching TV and, you know, reading the paper. But at a certain point, you want to put that down and go do something you feel good about.
Right.
You can do that for about 3 months?
I did it for 6 months. I took golf lessons, bought all the clubs, went out and played, became thoroughly frustrated at my ineptitude as a golfer. And you can't golf a lot in Montana, so I had a short window.
What's it, about a 2-month window?
That's about a 3-month window.
Okay.
Jackie, I had enough empirical evidence I was not a good golfer. Nor did I want to be a partner to anybody and thoroughly frustrate them.
Yeah.
So I needed to do something else along the lines. You know, I've published over 50 articles and interviews in various publications, New York Times, Washington Post, and like doing that. But these are all, you know, fact-based fiction interviews, articles, and so forth. Writing fiction was a huge, it's huge fun. Wicked good fun, as I would say. And I like doing that too.
What you're describing, Richard, really reminds me of so many articles, and so many speakers today are talking about a revolution in the way that we look at work, as the baby boomers born between 1946 and 1964, as they began to move into retirement age, and yet they're unwilling to retire, they're redefining what it meant and what it means to be an older American.
Joe, here's the rub. I'm at 66. I'm mentally and physically fit.
Right.
But our society sort of puts us in a position where you're expected to retire at the age I was. And I went along thinking, well, that was what I was supposed to do. And we're pretty good about doing what we're supposed to do.
Right.
But I eventually rebelled after about 6 months and said, this is not what I was supposed to do.
Right.
And so I found my way back. And I just intend to keep going until I can't keep going.
Right.
You look at people like Warren Buffett, who's in his 80s now. What a mentally acute genius of a man doing what he does so well, and there are many others like him.
Right. There's so many different trends at the same time. Medical technology continues to become better and better every year.
We're living healthier, longer lives.
Absolutely.
We are, and we touched on it earlier.
Productive lives.
We've made that change, Jackie, and I talked about it earlier, about the health consciousness as a part of our society. It would not match it up with the working part of our society. And, there are pressures from below of people coming up who want to occupy your positions and things you do because you're old and you need to go, and you have to reckon with that.
You know, it's funny. I've mentioned this concept a couple of times on this show is the early baby boomers, the early ones, they're pioneers. They're changing everything now.
Mm.
I'm on the tail end of the baby boomers.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time I get to that point, you're going to have the road clear for me.
So what I'm saying is find a way to power down so you can get the benefits of being a little older and having the financial ability to have some leisure time. But you still, I call it engagement. You still need to be engaged mentally and physically, but mentally more for me. And things that stimulate you and put me on radio shows at 66 and talking about things that I'm passionate about.
Right. Well, that's what we live for.
It comes with experience. He's got experience. Yeah. The guy worked for two presidents.
Yeah.
I mean, do we want to talk to a 24-year-old, really?
I posted
people with the experience.
I posted the picture of a president the other day on my Facebook page.
Right. Right.
And asked people if they could recognize the people that were there, and nobody came back and told me who was there. Not even me in the picture.
I didn't see that. Who was that?
President Carter. It was a day at the Pentagon River entrance where I happened to be the tallest Army ceremonial guy there, so I got to be number one on the cordon of joint services with the president, Jimmy's President Carter's mother
Rosalind,
was there. Rosalind and mother also. Our Secretary of Defense, and it was a ceremony for the Defense Minister of Japan at the time who was there. So, and then of course
after. As I recall, George, you had an M16 in that picture.
No, those were M14s. Our ceremonial weapons were M14s.
Oh, you're showing your age, George.
Was it loaded?
No.
Ceremonial.
But it was a working weapon.
Yes, indeed.
It was a working weapon. When we would go to the White House for ceremonies, they would do inspections. They would make us open the chambers and make sure. But
that was when the Secret Service actually worked.
I'm sorry?
Oh. That was when Secret Service actually worked, Richard.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, here we go. Yes, but I will say I did get, and this may ruin my career as an adjunct instructor with FEMA, but I was able to leave.
Don't say it, George. Don't say it. Don't say it.
I was able to leave the White House with some clippings of ivy from around the from around the tennis courts.
Oh, I see.
You're done.
Yep.
You're done, George.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, if they ask, I'll tell them the truth, though.
I've got the ivy.
Yeah, you know, it's not anymore. I don't. That was the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
When I was there.
Now, Richard, are you going to be doing any promotion of your book, Good Crazy?
Actually, I just heard from, there's a website I do, I'm a contributing author to Gay Levy, her Backer Survival. I'm going to be doing her book fair. Mm-hmm. I just received this evening the information I needed to help her with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it being the last month of college here, I'm inundated with papers and exams and things like that, so... I'm trying to get through that in early December, and then I'll really gear up in January with
mm-hmm.
things like that. I'm just trying to set them up. No, I'm actually talking with other folks to do that, but nothing I could feel like completely announce tonight until we've settled on dates and times and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
George, you need to have Richard come down and speak in Manhattan Beach.
Well, you know, if he ever wanted to come down to Manhattan Beach, I'd put him up here at the house, and I would, we'd put together an evening at Joslyn for both CERT and the community, and I think I could probably mm-hmm. arrange that. So maybe when it gets a little colder and the snow gets a little deeper there?
I'd certainly be willing to do that. It's about 6 below 0 in Bozeman. What's the temperature in Manhattan Beach right now?
About 67.
Yeah, that sounds much better.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. It's 62. It's gone down. Yeah, it's gone down. It's 62
frigid.
Now.
That's frigid. All right, it's frigid. Okay.
Well, that's...
I had a golden retriever who went to the back door this morning at 10 below, looked outside, looked at me like I have to go to the bathroom, but I really have to go outside, and the answer is yes, you do. So she went out and went right back then.
And she didn't spend too much time out there, I'll bet.
Well, actually, after about 5 minutes, she came to the door, and she kept lifting her paws, and I finally realized this poor dog's going to get frostbite if I don't bring her in.
Yeah.
My gosh.
Well, it's the polar vortex. You're getting it. You're the first front, right?
Well, see, I talked about the climate, Jackie, and here we are. We're back on climate.
Right. There's so many things extant out there in the world that... you know, life is very interesting. We're obviously living that famous old Chinese curse. We're living in very interesting times.
Yeah.
And we're very, very excited that Richard Broom is a part of those times. We're so thankful to have you, Richard, with us today.
Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed the show today.
It's a pleasure. We'll have you back. Perhaps we'll have you in the flesh here in Manhattan Beach soon. We really enjoyed it, and everyone needs to go to Amazon.com, and Good Crazy is available for sale right now. Richard E. Broom with an E, B-R-O-O-M-E. So look it up.
Richard Earl Broom.
Richard Earl Broom. Excited and very excited. Is there any other information? I'm sorry. Is there any other contact information that you'd like to give out often, Richard?
I do give out my email address on LinkedIn. It's rebroome, R-E-B-R-O-O-M-E, O-O-M-E at AOL.com.
Great. George?
All right. Last question. On the front of leaving the trees, is that a picture you took? Around the house?
That is actually stock footage of a mountain scene on the front of Good Crazy. Actually, those are the Bridger Mountains that I talk about in the book. I found and I used footage that was approved and bought. were good crazy. So you're looking at the Montana Mountains, and I look at every morning from my house. And it helps me as I sit here and write and watch the sun come up. I typically write between 4 and 6 in the morning. I was in the Army so many years, I just get up early and enjoy the quiet time and do writing at that point in time. Then the day starts, and, you know, you're lost to the rest of the day. But that's actually, I'm good crazy, that's actually Montana. And looking at the mountains, I look at every morning.
Wow. Wow. Wonderful. Well, again, thank you so much, Richard. We're thrilled to have you. And I think, George, we're ready. Any last parting thoughts?
Parting thoughts. Enjoy the rest of the week. The class is over. The three weekends are over. I get to relax this coming weekend, I think. I'm not sure. Be safe, you know, and be prepared. And I thank you all for listening.
I have one thing to add.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night, the downtown Manhattan Beach open house and pier lighting ceremony.
Oh, that's right.
Whoa.
Yeah, Wednesday night. Yeah, big deal. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. Remember last year it was featured on the Travel Channel, the Travel Show or the Travel Channel? Yeah. So, Wednesday
channel.
Night. Yeah, so that's a big, big event tomorrow night. So.
All right. Well, don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night, it's going to be November 18th. You want to be there for the pier lighting in Manhattan Beach. Awesome.
Or maybe it's the 19th.
Thank you.
Today's
19th.
The
18th. Oh, is it the 19th?
Wednesday night, the 19th, tomorrow night,
tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's going to be great. Oh, and I'm a judge for the window displays.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so I'll be down there judging the windows, picking the winners.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much again, Richard, and we will be talking to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. That's our show for today, ladies and gentlemen. Please join us again on Thursday for our Spotlight South Bay, and, of course, on Fridays for our Manhattan 360 with the Manhattan Beach Chamber. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye now.